Hello and welcome to the World Wanderers podcast. I'm Ryan.
I'm Amanda, and we're your hosts.
And today on the podcast, we have an awesome conversation we are bringing to you.
Yes, we have a fellow named Christian Dennis, who we know from business school. He's somebody that I actually didn't really know him before this, but I'd met him at the student bar, apparently. So him and Ryan connected over classes, I think. You were in the same group together?
Yeah, so we were friends during business school, but not like the best of friends. But then afterwards, kind of just saw each other's trajectory in life and realized that we were really going the same direction. So Christian also went traveling right after university, also worked for a period of time before going traveling again in South America again, or similar to us. And then when he got back, he didn't go back to the city and look for a job to build, to climb the ladder and build a career. He really rediscovered his passion for painting and creating art. So that's what he's been doing.
Yeah. And so we'll have all the information and point notes and select links in the show notes at www.theworldwanderers.com. If you want to check out some of Christian's artwork, you can find him on Instagram, and we'll have the link for that in the show notes as well. And without further ado, here's Christian. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Christian. It's really cool to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. It's really cool to catch up with people who have sort of a similar background to us. Being a Haskayne grad as well, it's cool to see that you've kind of broken away, I guess, from the expectation of what you should be doing after you have a business degree.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Your kind of like life path seems to have mirrored ours pretty closely.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's the cool thing with you, Ryan, is I don't think we were ever like the tightest of friends at school, but it's, I think that's a really cool thing about social media is we've been able to kind of keep in touch with each other's life paths, and it seems to have gone very similarly. And I think kind of keeping that interest in each other's lives has been pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really, it is really cool. 'Cause it's like knew each other, but then you just continue on in time and you notice, oh, this person's kind of heading the same direction as I am. Like, we should connect. So for everybody listening, Christian went to the same university as Amanda and I, same department of the university. And then right after you graduated, you also went traveling, right?
Yeah, I got my first travel experience the summer after my third year of university. I had a friend who had done a trip with an organization called Global Youth Network. And the way that it works is they have through Calgary, they had it through a bunch of cities all over Canada, but through Calgary, they had five or six teams that would go to different third world countries or developing areas of second or first world countries. And the way it works is you go for your first trip, and then the next time you go on a trip, so the year after, you're able to apply as an intern leader. And then on your third trip, you're able to apply as a leader. So my friend was had gone on one trip. She went to Uganda her first year. And then the second year, she was an intern leader for a group that went to Brazil. So she kind of recruited me to go along on that, and basically just had to ask for time off work and ask my mom if it was okay to borrow some money. And everyone was really supportive. So we started in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And we just kind of learned about the street communities there. And they have a really incredible drug problem in downtown Sao Paulo. And then we spent a couple weeks out in the suburbs in a place called Francisco Morado. And we taught sports camps for underprivileged youth. It was a very poor area. So that was my first experience. And it was a really, really amazing experience. And I think it made me view the world in a very different way. And then the following summer, I was an intern leader on a trip that went to northern Thailand. And we worked with Burmese refugees, which is kind of a hidden problem that's basically the easiest way to describe it is if there is like a Rwandan genocide, it's happens kind of in a very short amount of time, and there's many, many deaths, and it kind of catches international awareness. Whereas with Burma, it was a military dictatorship that was stretching over decades, and there was constant civil war with there's, I think, 30-plus ethnic groups in Burma, or 30-plus languages. So there's a whole bunch of tribes kind of in the jungle areas of Burma. But the main ethnic group was the Burmese, and that's who ran the government. And they basically had this military dictatorship that kind of wreaked havoc all over the tribal areas. And millions of people have fled into Thailand. So we were working with refugees and refugee organizations that were working to kind of provide well-being for the people living in refugee camps and trying to find jobs in Thailand and trying to get immigration status, and then also helping people come across the border from Burma to hopefully find a better life. Kind of similar to maybe what happens with like Northern Mexicans coming into the United States. A little bit different scenario, but same idea. So yeah, that's kind of where like the travel bug started for me. And then 6 months after that, I graduated university. And about a month after that, I hopped on a plane and went back to Southeast Asia for 7 months. And three of those months was teaching English in Northern Thailand to Burmese refugees. I was kind of out in the middle of nowhere, secluded a little bit. And it was a really, really great experience. And I don't have any regrets, but definitely made me learn that I don't want to be a teacher.
That's fair. Did you take like a program to get certified to do that?
No, that was the interesting thing about this organization. Basically the way it worked, it was Burma Volunteer Program. And I'd recommend anyone who's going to Southeast Asia to look it up, because it's much different than just going and like teaching English at a school. They're kind of like the mother organization, and they've got branches all over Thailand and Burma and other countries where there are Burmese immigrants, refugees, I guess I should say. And basically you go, and they spread them out by about a month each. So every month they have a week where they bring volunteers in, and they basically, they do a bunch of workshops and stuff like that. And they give you a list of organizations that need volunteers, and you kind of sign up for your top three. And then based on your experience and maybe your education and what your interests are, they place you with certain organizations.
That's interesting.
So I was working with like an ethnic organization, in a town called Mae Hong Son. It was just outside of that town, which is about, 6 hours west of Chiang Mai in Northern Thailand.
Okay.
So I basically just did like, community development stuff, and it was mostly teaching English, but yeah, it was really cool. And it was kind of nice to be like outside of Bangkok or outside of Chiang Mai doing something.
Yeah, definitely.
Felt a little bit,
Bangkok
felt a little
is
bit
like pretty crazy.
I know.
Yeah, but yeah, you get like way more authentic experience, it seems like.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, and it was tough. It was one of the, I'd say probably the loneliest times of my life, just because I was so secluded and everyone that I was living with was barely English as a second language. Like there was only one or two people in the whole organization that kind of spoke more fluently. And they were trying to get into university level programs. So basically my job was to help educate them to make them prepared for the potential to become educated in Thailand, which is very, very difficult for them. With refugee status, there's a whole bunch of hoops that they have to jump through in order to attend universities or even attend high schools there. So it was definitely a life changing experience for sure. And I think there were some positives and negatives, but
did you learn any of their language while you were there?
I tried to, and because I went to Burma for a month right after that, it was something I tried to learn, but I think I did the typical English as a first language tourist, like thank you, hello, you're welcome, may I have this to eat. But the really tricky thing with Burma is that they do have, I think it was like 36 languages or something like that.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think like, well, Burmese is their official language, I believe. And that's like a larger proportion of the population. But then they have all these ethnic groups, and pretty much every ethnic group has their own dialect or like a variation of the Burmese dialect. So the places that we went to were like mainly Burmese, but like we might run, go to a restaurant or something like that that's run by someone from the Karen tribe, and they've got a completely different language. So they kind of get your basic Burmese, but they wouldn't understand a fluent speaking Burmese person there. So it was tough, and but I think it's one of those things. And like I did the same thing with South America with Spanish, is you can always learn more. And I think it's I don't know. I think there's like a little bit of Western snobbery that we think that everyone should speak English. And I think we kind of felt the same way in Burma, but Burma is the exact opposite of that because they're so removed from the global scale. They're just kind of opening up now. Like they just had an election, and kind of like their figurehead freedom fighter, who actually won an election in the 80s or 90s, but the government just basically said like, ah, no, we're not going to count this election. So you can go back to jail and, or back under house arrest. But she actually finally won this past year. So it's kind of like a really big time for Burma.
Yeah, I'd actually heard that.
Traveling in Burma after working with refugees for so long? Like, do you have like resentment towards their government?
I think there's this thing, and I think especially like after being so close to it, there was this kind of like this dislike for the government, and almost this like dislike for kind of the main population, because all these other ethnic groups were being like persecuted, and they were being attacked and bombed, and like villages were being burned down and and stuff like that. So it was I wouldn't say that I had any like I didn't have any hatred towards anyone, but like you see someone in a military uniform and you kind of just automatically assume that they've done some bad things, which is like a really stupid way to look at things. But yeah, I think it definitely made me like way more compassionate towards people, just in general, because like that was my first experience really, being face to face with people who'd like literally have to flee for their lives. And kind of knowing that, yeah, it's almost like a bully system over there. Is like the government and the military have the power, but it was tough. But the way that they do it, or at least when I was there, it's kind of opened up a little bit more, but they restrict tourists to where you can go. So they kind of like, there's kind of like it's almost like the same idea as a gringo trail. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, maybe not as established as the gringo trail, but everywhere we went, you kind of like saw the best of the country. So you were never actually able to go into these ethnic areas or these rural areas where the fighting was still happening or where there were people still fleeing. They didn't allow you to get that like firsthand perspective of it, but talking to people and living with people on the other side of the border in Thailand. They have a very, they're very thankful to be alive and to have that kind of refuge on that side. But, there is still a lot of bitterness and a lot of anger because they want to be obviously in their home country with their families and stuff like that. So,
yeah, that's pretty interesting coming from a country like Canada where, I mean, we really do have a lot of freedoms compared to people in a country like that. Did it make you kind of like, I guess, feel like gratitude or shift your perspective on where you come from?
Yeah, definitely. I think both of these volunteer trips and then my volunteer experience in Thailand afterwards, like it really, I think that was probably the first shift in my life, being in a business school where it's very kind of success and profit focused, and just kind of seeing firsthand experience of the opposite side of humanity and, I think that was the first time, like, I think I came back and I wanted to like pursue international development or something like that could benefit people. I think just like being compassionate towards one another, it's the golden rule. And it's something that like is seen in pretty much all world religions, but so few people actually follow it and live by it. So I think those experiences were really, like really beautiful for me just because they were hard and it was really terrible, like seeing those things and witnessing struggle and suffering. But I think in the end, that's kind of the whole purpose of these volunteer trips for younger people, especially, you're not going to change the world in that month that you're there or those few months that you're there, but the best thing you can do is kind of take your experience and take what you've learned from those people and apply it to your life, and hopefully promote kind of that that way of living to your friends and your family and your kind of smaller circles. And then like what you guys are doing with the podcast, I think that's really cool, that it's a really, really simple way of communicating with a large group of people. And, I'm a huge fan of podcasts for that reason, just cause you can kind of get your message out. And there's no filters and no one telling you what you can and can't say. So
yeah, it's kind of like a freer way to like give information, I guess, where you're not restricted by what people want you to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you had a sponsor and like, oh, you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to say, I don't know if you guys swear. Are they allowed to say fuck or something like that? Like,
just like swear gratuitously for no reason.
Yeah.
It's funny because like when we released the first episode, my mom listened to it and I was like, oh, if you have any feedback, let me know. And she's like, I just don't really like the random swear words. And I was like, okay, I hear that, but you're not really our target audience. So that's probably just going to keep happening.
Yeah.
So then you went back to Calgary, right? After your experience in Thailand and Burma?
Yeah. So I came back the spring of 2000, or sorry, the autumn of 2012. And my brother and I moved into an apartment downtown, and I just kind of floated around doing odd jobs. Like I did a warehouse job for a little while. And I think throughout that trip, I kind of hit a point where I didn't really want to necessarily pursue the traditional path of a business student. But after being pretty much unemployed for 3 months, I had, a university friend, who actually got promoted out of his job. So his old position opened up and he suggested that I apply for it. And, so I worked in, corporate Calgary for another year and a half. And yeah, it was one of those experiences that maybe I didn't love every second of it, but I think I was able to take away a lot of it. And I think I learned more what I don't want to do in life and like the type of job that I don't want to have, not necessarily what I do want to pursue or what I do want to follow. But, I think working for a big company that, the sole purpose is profit and it's providing a service for people and because of the type of service they provide, they have a lot of power in, the prices that they set and what they're able to offer and stuff like that. So, I don't want to like go into too many specifics about the exact company and stuff like that, but
yeah,
it's,
totally. That's fine.
I basically worked in a department that was in charge of pricing, and packaging their services. And, there were, I don't know, regular occurrences where I felt, not that it was pushing the boundaries of ethics, but it was just kind of pushing the boundaries of good manners towards customers and, being on the receiving end of that kind of service. Like I see how it's not really, it's not really always from a human perspective, it's not always the best feeling to kind of be contributing to something that maybe isn't, I don't really know how to say it.
In line with your values type thing? Like, did you feel like you were
working
for a company that wasn't really like doing things that you believed in?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was my first time, cause my only past experience, I'd been working just for a small advertising company. And it was my first time kind of feeling like I was just like a gear in the machine and like my work wasn't really contributing to anything life-changing directly, but it was contributing to the whole. Especially with my department was very central in the company. And it was a really great experience. Like I don't have any regrets, and I met some great people through it. But I ended up being a part of a mass layoff. They kind of hired a consulting company to come in and basically cut the dead weight. And I was at the bottom of the totem pole. So I got axed, which was another really cool experience. Like being, I don't know, it was kind of like that, scene in Office Space where they're like analyzing people, like, oh, so what do you do here? And like, how do you contribute? But instead of having that interview, they just kind of came to that conclusion without talking to me about what I actually did. So
did you know, like when was there like an assessment going on for a couple weeks and everyone was like, you know, worried that they were about to get like voted off the island or something like that?
Yeah. There was kind of that buzz going around and people knew it was going to happen. And, just being the type of person that I am, I, especially like not really seeing that job as my career, I didn't really stress too much about it. I try not to think about it too much, but there's a lot of people around me who were very uncomfortable for a couple of weeks. And, basically kind of the management level people, got let go on a Friday and everyone obviously heard about it. So it made everyone kind of stew over the whole situation over the weekend. And then Monday rolled around and that's when they started doing, doing the cuts. But in the end, like it's really cliche. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And, I got a nice little package that, supported me on my next trip to South America with my friend Pete. So it was, a blessing in disguise and I wouldn't have traded it for anything, being able to have that freedom to go on another trip. Cause as you both know, it's kind of it's the best.
Yeah. Something that I found, cause we did same thing. Like we traveled, came back, got jobs in corporate Calgary and then traveled again. And I came back from my first trip with all these like takeaways and like ways I wanted to be and things I wanted to apply to my life. And I found that as time went on, I slowly lost like touch with that. Did you experience any of that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly what happened to me. It's like any kind of, I don't know, quote unquote life-changing experience is you're so shaken up by it and you're so motivated by it and you want to make these changes to your life, but then you kind of throw yourself back into the same environment and the same situation that you were in before. And it's really hard to apply all those things that you learned or kind of make that, change in direction in your life. And especially coming home from a trip is you spend all your money having fun and then you come back and you want to continue to have those experiences and have that kind of lifestyle, but you need also to make money to survive. And the easiest way to make money is to put your degree to use. And if your degree's in the business world, then there's like a certain, especially as someone without a ton of experience, like there's a certain role you kind of have to, accept, for the first few years of your career. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely felt that. And I think, I think I was able to kind of keep a lot of my morals and a lot of my, like, I think my mindset was able to stay the same, but as time went on, it suffered obviously. And the lifestyle of commuting and working in an office setting where you're kind of knew what you're getting yourself into every day. It was definitely draining, but, I think I try to remain the same type of person, but there's definitely a level of like, I don't know if bitterness is the right word, but it's kind of like you just get tired and you kind of get fed up with the system. And I felt like that after probably about a year of working there. And I couldn't imagine like people who follow a career path that they feel that way. And it builds up over decades of work. So
totally. It's kind of like this feeling of, or I don't know if it's feeling is the right word, but it's almost like not enjoying life. Like it comes to this, oh, it's Monday.
Yeah.
Like, okay. It's Wednesday. Like week's half over. Like, oh, thank God it's Friday. Like weekend.
Yeah. You totally fall into that. It's like,
it's
you
hard not
Wednesday,
to.
And like, oh my God, Friday's only 2 days away. And
yeah, totally. Yeah. But it's like, when you think about not enjoying like, you know, 3 to 5 days of your life, that's so much of your life that you're not enjoying.
Yeah. And then you're too exhausted by the weekend to even enjoy your weekend, or you go out drinking Friday night and Saturday's a write off. And it's kind of it's a nasty downward spiral you can get yourself into, I think.
Yeah, but, definitely.
But again, I think that's just our perspective. And I think I always fear sometimes when I talk like this, people just think I'm this like, oh, like screw society and like the system's messed up. And like, I think there are certain aspects of the system and kind of the path that people are expected to follow. And I'm seeing that with a lot of my friends right now, but they're all very, very happy. So like the get a house, get engaged, get married sort of thing. And it's difficult kind of being on the outside of that and having a different perspective. And I'm so happy for them because this is exactly what they want to be doing. And they are very, very happy doing it. But I think a lot of people look at you differently when you don't necessarily feel the same way. Mm-hmm. So basically I want to say like, if you're happy doing what you're doing, that's kind of the sole purpose of life. And it doesn't matter how you get to that point, as long as you're there and as long as you're doing something that is rewarding to you and that you can kind of take something away from it and just be happy on a day-to-day basis. And, I just have never felt like that at a job before.
Do you think that your experience, going abroad and volunteering and then going for a longer period of time after graduation kind of prevented you from like accepting that kind of corporate day to, like Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 lifestyle? Like where you were just like, oh, I know there's something better. I can like feel more alive.
Yeah.
And I just can't deal with this on some level.
Yeah, I think. And I think it honestly goes back to that day that my friend invited me to come to the workshop about the volunteer program in third year. Because I think in my first couple of years of university, like most business students, is you see the potential and you kind of hear where you can go with your life. And especially being in Calgary at the time, like it was a very, very profitable city with the energy industry. And it was kind of exciting being like 18, 19, 20 and being like, oh my God, like look at all this money I can make. And like, look at all these things that I can have. So part of me looks back at that moment and thinks that like, that was kind of the first like little shift in a different direction. But then part of me just like looks at myself in general. And I just have a very hard time, like really putting my heart and soul into things that I don't enjoy. And I've kind of always been like that. Like when I was a kid, my parents put me pretty much into every single sport and I would like do it for a few weeks or I'd do it for a couple months and I'd be like, I'm kind of bored of it. So I'm not going to do it anymore. I've always kind of felt like that with jobs where it's, I've always felt like I've had the ability to just walk away if it wasn't kind of treating me right anymore. So part of me thinks that if I hadn't gone traveling, like maybe I could be into a 6-digit salary right now, like wearing a suit and tie every day to work. But then part of me also thinks that with kind of my own human nature, I may have just been too lazy to get to that point and like would have been fine just kind of working, flying below the radar for the rest of my life and getting by, but not ever being super wealthy or successful. So I don't know. Maybe it's a mixture of both.
Did you have any plan to go traveling again before getting laid off? Or was that really like the thing that spurred that?
Yes. So my friend, Peter and I, it was in August, so 8 months before I got laid off, we had purchased tickets for the World Cup in Brazil. And I was kind of at a place where with that job, I just like I was very unsure of my future there and whether I wanted to stay there or not. So there was kind of always this thought in the back of my head that it might just become a big trip. And then as time kind of wound down, it felt more and more sure that it was going to become a bigger trip. And then I got laid off a couple months, before I even had to make that decision. So the timing worked out really well. And it gave me the opportunity to, spend 6 months going around South America and, I'd say like that 6 months was another kind of, I don't know. I think they all the traps, they kind of stack up on one another. And this one was, I think the big one for me. I was more mature. I was more outgoing. I was, kind of able to experience the wonders of that continent, to the fullest. And I think I walked away with that or from that trip with, definitely a new perspective on life. And, I think if anything, it just kind of made me realize that what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling about careers and about lifestyle and stuff like that, it's all true. Like it's all gravy. I don't have to stress too much. Like I don't have to kind of feel like an outsider anymore because you meet so many amazing people who are experiencing the same thing as you and listening to your podcast while I was traveling through South America. And like, I remember listening to the Salt Flats episode, like a week after I went to the Salt Flats and I was like, oh man, I think I like felt the exact same way about the Salt Flats. I think you guys were both kind of like fairly underwhelmed by it or I can't remember exactly what you were talking
about. I thought the Salt Flats themselves were pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
But like the whole Jeep tour, I feel like I just wasn't prepared for like how cold it was going to be, how long we were going to be in the car every day, like how shitty the food was going to be.
Yeah, how many lakes that you see in 3 days? Like, by the sixth lake, you're just like, all right, like, here's some more flamingos. Like, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, it is, but the actual salt flat is very cool. The other parts,
it's spectacular.
I think I kind of lost. I wasn't appreciating them as much as I could have been.
Yeah,
it's funny because we did an episode the other day
dragging you along in that Land Cruiser.
Yeah,
we did an episode the other day with. Guy named Hunter Stanford, and he was telling me him and a friend were driving like their own van around, and they were like stuck in San Pedro for a long period of time because every time they tried to make a journey up, their car would break down.
Oh yeah,
he said they did it like four times before it like went well, and I was like, oh god. Yeah. So they spent like over a week in San Pedro.
In San Pedro de Atacama.
Yeah,
we got stuck there. My friend had a bit of an accident and had to get stitched up and was a bit concussed. So we ended up spending about a week there, maybe a week and a half. But it's a cool little town, but it's hot.
And there's like not that much to do. Like you can, there's obviously stuff to do. It's really cool to be there, but I feel like it's good for like 3 days.
Yeah. I think 3 days would have been nice. 10 days was probably a little bit too much, but.
So what route did you take around South America?
So we started in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and we worked our way up to Salvador, Brazil, which is, I don't know if you look on a map, I think it's about halfway up the west coast of Brazil. And then we flew from Salvador to a city called Manaus, which is in the middle of the Amazon jungle. And it's really strange city. It's like you can only really access it by plane or by boat. There's a few small roads that go in and out, but for the most part, it's very isolated. And it's a city of, I think it's somewhere between 1 and 2 million people. So it's a big industrial town just in the middle of the forest. So that's where we watched our, we went to 2 World Cup games there.
Oh, cool.
And then we did a bit of a jungle trek after that. And then we flew from Manaus to Medellin, Colombia, and then we worked our way south from there. So we missed the north coast of Colombia, which is a huge regret of mine because I've heard it's absolutely spectacular. But from Medellin, we basically just we followed the Gringo Trail south. So we did Colombia and then Ecuador. We spent 10 days in the Galapagos, which was really cool. And then back down Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia. And then worked our way down Chile and then flew from Santiago to Patagonia and spent 2 weeks in Patagonia and then flew up to Buenos Aires and then we ended the trip in Buenos Aires. So we didn't, I didn't really explore Argentina too much. I wish I had a little bit more time to do that, but it's one of those things you can say that about any trip. Like I wish you could always wish you did more, but.
Oh yeah. There's always more to see too, which is the thing.
Yeah. But I think the way that we did it, we went at a really nice pace. And I think it was one of those things where we never really rushed ourselves. So it was nice to like go to a city and have a couple of days to experience what it offers, but then also have a day to relax and kind of unwind and get your energy back. And cause I've met some people who travel and it's just like, oh yeah, I saw 16 countries in 3 weeks. And you're like, holy shit. How do you get to really like sit down and experience a place when you just pretty much see their capital city and maybe like one other town or like go to the beach or something like that. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah. It was really, really good pace as always. Like I wish I could have afforded to stay longer, but I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Were you pretty close with your friends?
Did you have a similar route or did you go? Yeah. We were high school friends. And then he actually came to Calgary in his second year of university. So we lived together for 3 or 4 years. So we knew what being together 24/7 was like, and we're both just really like easygoing, laid back people. And I think we felt comfortable separating ourselves when we needed our alone time. But we ended up meeting a Scottish guy in Colombia. So we did, all of Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, then he separated and went into Argentina when we went to Chile, but then we did Patagonia together and ended off in Buenos Aires together. We traveled with him for, about 4 months. So we kind of had like a third member to our group, which is really nice. I think three is a really nice number for traveling. Because if like two people want to hang out and the other person like wants their alone time, it's not really like you're kind of isolating each other. There's always that extra presence around. There's always that opportunity to kind of have company, even if you're sick of one person or you just want a bit of separation from the group. So yeah, it worked out really, really well. And we're still in touch. He lives in Australia and trying to convince him to come to Canada for a ski season, but he likes the beaches and the sun a little bit better than the snow and the cold. So
yeah, I don't blame him personally.
Yeah. What are your experiences with kind of maintaining relationships after trips?
Yeah, we haven't had any, like we've met quite a few people that we've continued being in contact with.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We met a friend like on our first trip and we did like one city with her. So like 3 days type thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we didn't really like travel with other people.
Yeah. The only times are really when we've done tours. I think it's like a bit different when you're traveling as a couple. I think people are, I don't know. So I went traveling by myself for the first time into Central Europe earlier this year. And I found it's like a lot, I feel like more people are open to like talking to you and you like meet more people and do more things with people because they're just like, oh, one person, I can like, we can come hang out versus two people. I feel like it's, or a couple, it's like a little bit different. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
There's almost like a force field around you. I just came back from a trip with my girlfriend to Central America. And there's kind of there's like a force field that only other couples can enter. It's like, that only other couples want to enter. I think it's difficult for like individuals to kind of like feel comfortable penetrating the bubble that you kind of create for yourself as a couple. But then you meet other couples and it's like, you get along immediately.
It's funny. Cause like we would always try to, if we saw somebody like by themselves and we were going to get food, like we'll try to be like, hey, we're going to go grab like dinner. Like, do you want to come? People are kind of always like, oh, is that like, okay. And it's like, yeah, it's cool. Like we're just two people.
You're probably also like, we would really appreciate a third person right now because we want to hear each other's heads off.
Yeah, it's funny because people kind of like forget, like even though you're a couple and you're together, like you're still two people who need space. And like, as great as it is to be with that person, it's nice to interact with other people as well.
Like, yeah,
you kind of need that for your sanity, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So one thing
I think that's just like the... Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, no, I just said that's the beautiful thing about traveling is kind of the, it's obviously about the places that you go and the places that you see, but it's about the relationships that you make and kind of, you can look back on those experiences and be like, oh, I climbed Machu Picchu and I was with these specific people for that experience. And maybe we haven't kept in touch, but there's like a special bond that you have with people, depending on the experience that you had with them. And it wouldn't have been the exact same experience if it had just been you and your significant other, you or your friend, and you were kind of cut off from the other tourists or the other travelers in that time and place. So,
That's a good point.
It was definitely tough being a couple because I think it's harder for the people to warm up to you, and you kind of have to make more of an effort to kind of force your friendship on people. And sometimes they appreciate it and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. You kind of have to welcome them in. Something that's cool about like living, I guess, in 2016 now is social media really allows you to connect with so many people. So saying the Machu Picchu thing, like to a couple that were on our Machu Picchu tour having a baby now. So it's been cool, like seeing this progression of her like being pregnant and she's like ready to pop pretty much now. But
that's crazy.
Yeah. It's just been cool seeing that on Facebook.
Yeah.
One of the things we've talked about a lot is just how much it seems like relationships or people that you meet traveling, you just get to such a deeper level so much quicker with them.
For sure.
When you just like spend a couple days together and talk about, you don't like, it seems like you skip this first like surface level small talk conversation all that time. So you just like jump on to like big gigantic topics and really get to know people on a deeper level.
And that's also one of those things too, where if you don't like the person, then you know you're not going to see them ever again if you don't want to. Like if they're going in opposite direction, you can either have a really great bond and want to stay in touch, or you're just kind of like, well, this person's not for me. And like, nice to meet you and see ya. But it's not, there's never that like awkwardness of being a part of a group of friends back home. And there's someone there in that group that you don't like, and you have to spend all the time with them. So it's, yeah, like you said, it's really nice because it kind of just like, blows open everything right away. And then you can get a really good sense of people at a very short amount of time, and then make your opinion on them, and then choose what kind of relationship you want to have with them. So,
yeah, and there's way less incentive. One thing that's changed for me a lot through traveling is trying to care a lot less what people think about me. But like when you're at home working a job in a kind of solid social group, there's way more incentive for you to care about what people think. So you might worry about it more. Whereas you start traveling, you start getting this like revolving door of people in front of you, and you realize, it really doesn't matter at all. I can just like be myself.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's like, I think that's probably the most beautiful thing about traveling, is you can really, be yourself 100%. And I think, being in Canada and working at a corporate job, like there's a certain kind of image that you have to stick to. So when you travel, you can, not saying that you should like go off and be a complete asshole and like be like, oh, this is who I want to be. Like, it's just like, being comfortable in your own skin and like, not really having to worry about that judgment. And I think I'm naturally a very self-conscious person, but when I travel, I feel like it's that kind of weight is lifted off my shoulders, and you can kind of be who you want to be. And I think that's really, really cool thing about traveling for sure.
Yeah. That's something that really like resonates with me as well. Cause I've kind of spent a lot of my life being self-conscious and trying to like keep up with my friends and, you know, look or act a certain way. And traveling is like so freeing for me because I'm just myself.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to shower for 3 days, so I'm not going to shower for 3 days. And you can't do that when you're working, having to wear a shirt and tie every day. There's a certain standard you have to keep yourself to.
Yeah, I really don't like to comb my hair, so that's something that like doesn't really like fly in an office setting. It's kind of like, did you just wake up and roll out of bed? And I'm like, maybe.
So one thing I want to get into is Amanda and I had a experience going to 2 ayahuasca ceremonies, and I know you went and did an ayahuasca ceremony. We did an episode on it where we kind of talked about how it did have a big like life-changing impact on the way we saw things. Did you share that kind of experience?
Yeah. And I think it's one of those experiences for me where it almost seems really surreal. Like it was, over 3 days, it completely changed the direction of my life. It made me look at everything a different way. It made me feel towards people a different way. It still feels kind of like a distant dream, but, I also feel it inside of me every single day. So I did it in September of 2014. So almost a year and a half ago.
How did you hear about ayahuasca? When did you decide that you wanted to do it? And what's the background on it?
Someone very close to me, I'm not going to name names just in case, had done it on a trip to South America. I'm not exactly sure how he heard about it. But after listening to his experience, I knew immediately that it was something that I wanted to do. So when Pete and I, sorry, Pete, if I'm spilling the beans on you, when Pete and I went to South America, we had 3 things that we knew we wanted to do. And that was World Cup, Machu Picchu, and ayahuasca. So something going into the trip, we had picked out the organization that wanted to do it with already. And it was basically just kind of getting a ballpark of when we were going to be in that area. So we could book it. We booked it about a month in advance. So I had gone into that trip knowing about it and through podcasts and through my own personal research, I'd learned a lot about it. So I felt very comfortable going into it. I think there was a lot of the anxiety, was out. Obviously, like right before you drink it, there's a bit of anxiety, like, what am I getting myself into? but yeah, we talked about it constantly on our trip leading up to it, and talking about like, yeah, what we wanted to get out of it and kind of how our views on the world are changing through our travels. So we did two ceremonies, in the Sacred Valley outside of Cusco. My first night was pretty mild. I think I resisted it a little bit, so I didn't allow Mother Ayahuasca to take hold. And I kind of got that through the analysis with the shaman the next day. I was kind of explaining what my experiences were and my visions and how I was feeling. And he basically just said I was holding myself back and I wasn't completely giving myself over. So the next night I kind of said a little prayer before I drank it. And I basically asked the ayahuasca that I wanted to be the first to purge, cause I wanted to get right into it. And I think the first night it took me about 45 minutes to purge and I was the last one to do it. And then the second night it took me about 10 minutes to purge. Wow. So I jumped 2 feet in on the second night really, really quickly. And had, a roller coaster of experience. I hit the lowest lows I've ever had and the highest highs. And, I think my most profound experience was so going into my trip, my grandfather had been deteriorating health wise, over the past couple of years. And, he's a very, very special person to me. He kind of taught me a lot of things about being a man and, about being creative and just kind of, he was always a very kind, gentle person. And he really led by example in that sense. So when I was going into my trip, I had this like really like dark thought that I may never see him again. I think that's something that kind of hung over me for most of the trip. So the most profound thing on my ayahuasca experience was, I experienced his death. So I basically was with him and then went into what you would call the underworld with him. And then basically, blasted up into the cosmos with his spirit as his soul was leaving his body. It sounds hokey pokey to anyone who's never done it, but it was, it's this vivid memory that I have of just feeling like everything in this world that we work towards is kind of skewed. Like there's this path that we're expected to take and all these things that we're expected to acquire over life. But we're all going to die. And what's the point of it all if you're going to die in the end? Like, I don't know, I'm going to pass my Rolls Royce off to my son. Like, who cares? Like, it's just a piece of metal. He's probably going to want a new one anyways. So I think between experiencing death on such an intimate level and really looking at life and death very, very differently, it's changed my perspective on basically just like trying to pursue what I love to do in life. And if you can find something that you love to do and end up making a living off of it, then that, I think that's kind of like the ideal state. With my grandfather, he was, a very, very skilled woodworker. He was a creative woodworker. So I kind of got this like creativity from him throughout my life. And I was always into art and stuff like that as a kid. And, ayahuasca kind of blew this part inside of me open that I'd kind of been repressing over, probably the past 15 years. Because it, being in high school, it wasn't cool to do art. Like being an art student wasn't really, wasn't the highest social platform you could put yourself on. So I kind of stopped doing art after grade 8. And the first thing that I did the next day after ayahuasca is I picked up my pencil and just started sketching. And I kind of doodled for the last couple months of my trip. And then I came back and asked for some art supplies for Christmas for my parents. And, I sat down, I don't know if it was Christmas Day or Boxing Day, but I sat down and made this watercolor painting that like, it still resonates with me today. It's just this like really, really intensely powerful painting that I made that pretty much came out of nowhere. Cause I hadn't been practicing those skills for years and years. So I sat down after making this thing and I basically just like, it's this kind of elaborate eyeball. And I basically just like sat there and stared at it and all the memories and all the emotions that, the ayahuasca trip gave me kind of came flooding back out. And I sat there and I knew in an instant that like that was my path. And that art was the thing that I wanted to pursue. And it took a while to convince myself because I'm like, no, I'm a business student. Like I'm here because I've got this, like, I can't be a business student who becomes an artist. Like that's ridiculous. Like no one does that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I basically, it's been about a year now since I've been pursuing art. I actually, in the past couple of days, I sold my first gallery piece.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's small scale. Like it's an art gallery slash coffee shop in Kamloops. And basically they host local artists and they rent out wall space. And I had my first piece sell 3 days ago or something like that. So it was really, really, really cool. It was really cool just to have my work up on a wall. And for the most part, I've just been giving my art to friends and family or using it as gifts. I've raised, I think, close to $600 or $700 for charities, through, kind of putting my stuff up for an auction or a fundraiser, like people bid on it or offer to buy it with the proceeds going to, my girlfriend's, aunt runs a really awesome dog rescue organization. Out of Vancouver called Thank Dog I Am Out. So all I've raised a few dollars for them that have gone to the rescue efforts for dogs and basically just like friends and family who are trying to raise money for certain projects that they're working on or whatnot. So I've gotten a lot of pure joy out of giving my art, but also just the process of creating art has been really, really special experience for me. And I think with the whole experiencing death thing on ayahuasca, it's like, it almost kind of feels like I'm picking up where my grandfather left off. And, he passed away a few months after I got back from my trip. And it was like really, kind of a mind fuck to experience someone's death and then see them in the flesh and then experience their death in real life. So I think I absorbed something really powerful from those experiences. And I think it's like, it feels so natural for me to kind of pursue the path that he was on. And he never sold any of his items. His were always gifts and same ideas. He give a few of his stuff away for auctions. But yeah, it's just like this really weird psychedelic, like extension of him kind of like that's in me doing this artwork. And I kind of do it to honor him, but I do it because I love to do it. And yeah, I don't know if any of that made sense, but yeah, that's kind of, that's how it came out.
Relate to like quite a bit of that stuff. It's funny hearing you talk about the idea, getting really the idea of doing art coming like right after ayahuasca. Cause the idea for this podcast really came like right after we did our ayahuasca ceremony. I'd been thinking about, I don't remember how much I thought about starting a podcast, but
you kind of like mentioned
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I should start that. And like no ideas of what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then we were during the ayahuasca ceremony. One of the big things that kept coming up for me was just how I should just like do the stuff I want to do and stop trying to like force myself to do things I don't want to do. And
for sure.
So a couple of days later, Amanda and I went and did the Coca Canyon in Arequipa, like
yeah, 2 days beautiful later. Place.
And then when we were there, I was like, oh, like, do you want to start a podcast where we talk about travel? And then like, that's where this all came from.
Yeah.
We like practiced like a few recordings. Like,
nice.
I remember like sitting in a bunk bed in our hostel in Lima and we're recording on like Ryan's iPhone. So the audio is just like absolutely atrocious, but we were just practicing like talking because that's one of the biggest things, like talking to each other is so natural, but it's so awkward in the sense of talking to each other for other people to listen to.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really beautiful that you guys were just like jumped right into it and you have to start from somewhere. Like no artist is just going to pick up a paintbrush and create a masterpiece. Like for me, I had to start at kind of a base level and I don't know with your experiences, but obviously there's a lot of geometry in the ayahuasca trip. So most of my art is based off of sacred geometry and that world. And like, it's a very tough skill to learn, but like you said, you kind of have to start at, I don't know, the base level of whatever you're doing and over time. And obviously with practice with your podcast, they've been getting, I'm sure the flow of them has been getting better and you're probably finding your voices and your topics a little bit easier. And it's kind of, yeah, it's cool to, I'm sure it's cool to go back and like listen to your first couple podcasts. And for me, it's cool to go and look at.
It's a bit painful.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also, I bet it's, for me, it's really awesome. I can look at stuff that I made a year ago and I have this like visual representation of the growth that I've made, artistically and also like spiritually and just, yeah, kind of like my skill set towards my art. And I think, yeah, like if you put podcasts next to that, I'm sure you could listen to all your podcasts again, which I don't maybe recommend. You might tear your ears off listening to yourselves for too long, but yeah, I think ayahuasca is really amazing because it's like the most effective release of potential. Like it really, it kind of cuts away all the bullshit, and it's like this is something that you want to do. Like put your heart into it and go for it and pursue it. And if you fail or if you realize later on down the road that maybe it's not what you want to be doing, then stop doing it, or maybe kind of ease your way out of it and focus on something else that you want to do. And I've heard countless stories of people who have done ayahuasca and they've experienced similar things. And I think I've become kind of I don't want to say I've become a spokesperson for it, but I think when people are willing to listen and willing to talk about it and show any interest in it, I really find a lot of passion about sharing my experiences with other people. And, I've actually had two or three friends who have gone down and done ayahuasca or, actually, one of my friends did ayahuasca in BC. There's some.
Is it Nelson or something?
There's several. This one was on the island. But it's really kind of cool to. I'm not going around like. I try not to like throw it in other people's faces, be like, oh, hey, I did this really spiritual, cool thing, and I'm a way better person for it now. Like, you should do it too. But I think you can kind of like sense the energy from someone. And kind of tell if it would be good for them or not. And like, I know I've got friends who I wouldn't recommend that experience for. But it's been really cool to kind of encourage other people to do it or like maybe share my experience and give them some like base level education on it and kind of plant the seed. And then they go off and do it and have these mind blowing, life changing experiences. I think it's like this really beautiful tool that, I hope it can kind of gain some steam and hopefully more people can experience it. Cause I don't know. I think it's world changing. Like if it's something that you could force everyone to do, like kind of a rite of passage sort of thing. Like I think there'd be this incredible shift in perspective and consciousness. Yeah,
the world would be a very different place for sure.
Yeah. Like if you want to become a politician, you should, I don't do a half a dozen ayahuasca ceremonies.
Yeah, no more politicians.
Yeah.
It is amazing though how, yeah, it's just like before I'd never done any psychedelic drug before going in and doing ayahuasca. So like my idea of like what this experience would be like was kind of from TV, you know, oh, I'm just going to see some like funky stuff. And I knew like you purged and it's funny though, like I remember sitting there at the start and I was feeling like quite a bit of anxiety and I was like, okay, I need to like I need to make sure I like look like I've got it together so that I get like a decent amount of this stuff so I don't have like nothing happening. And at the same time, like freaking out about like, what if I get too much? What if it goes so like too crazy? But yeah, then you just go like, it's like so much more mind blowing than you could ever imagine. And then we went.
Oh, yeah.
And then like the first time was this crazy experience. And we went and did it a second time a couple weeks later. And it was just like, it made the first time look like almost nothing happened.
Yeah. And I think you kind of learn how to kind of give yourself over to the drug. And I don't know, for people who don't really know much about it, like the spirit's called Mother Ayahuasca. And it's a very strong feminine presence. And I firmly believe that she is this like mythical spirit or being or whatever you want to call it as. But I think the more comfortable you get with her, the more intense and the more educational and like the more effective experience you can have. And I think, yeah, I think the more times you do it, I've only done it twice, but I feel very drawn to go back and do it again. I think there's just this, you can kind of almost like domino effect yourself. Like you can just, once you get the first one down and then you keep on doing more and more and more, I think it just kind of, the information maybe is processed easier and you're more comfortable doing it. And, I think it's really, really, really amazing. And, I'm very, very thankful to have had that experience. very thankful to like have found what I love to do and be pursuing that with my whole heart. And it's the first time I've really experienced that with anything in life. And for people who haven't experienced that, like, you should really tap into your heart and kind of find what you like to do and find the people that you like to spend time with and roll with that and not worry about money and success. And obviously you need a stable financial situation, but that's what side jobs are for. You work a little bit and then do what you love to do. And I think that's kind of the key to happiness.
Is that what you're doing now? Like sort of like majority art and then kind of side jobs with it, or how's that working?
I haven't made any money off the art. I've sold that one piece, but when I look back at all the supplies and other things that I've put into it, like I'm in the negatives, but, I'm currently serving at a restaurant. I think kind of similar to what, I don't know what you did, but I know Ryan, you went and served after your South America trip. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of done something similar to that. So it's really cool because it's flexible hours and I'm not working like a full 8 hours a day. So I've really given myself a lot of time to work on it. And I see myself, it's hard to say it out loud because I think people kind of judge you weirdly for it, but like I see myself as an artist by trade and then I make my money by serving.
Yeah, that's cool.
So yeah. And whether or not it turns into something that I like become successful off in the future, or whether it's just like, I kind of look at it where I might put all the money that if I make any money off of art, I might put it towards a plane ticket, or I might put it towards another ayahuasca experience or something like that. So I may not be able to buy a new car with it, but I may be able to have like life experiences because of it. And I think that's kind of like almost like coming back to the source and really kind of keeping that happiness wheel going and just kind of riding on what feels good. So.
Yeah. And it seems like if you do pursue something with passion and like spend a ton of time improving at it, like eventually you get to a point where you're going to be able to make things that people want because it's good enough, because you've, instead of trying to force yourself to do something and you never really get that good at it, like if you're doing it because you love to do it, you become so much better at it.
Yeah, for sure. I can't remember who said it. I don't know if it was a quote or if it was just something that I heard on a podcast, but basically the guy said that like there is a market for everything. Like I think his example was like samurai swords. Like there's people who dedicate their lives to making samurai swords, and for them that is their art. Like that is their craft, and there's a market for that. So, and you could put it down to anything. Like I'm trying to look around my room, like wool socks. Like there's probably someone out there who loves making wool socks. Like that is their passion. And there's always going to be people out there who want to buy wool socks. So if you're able to put your heart and soul into something that you truly love doing, and over time you become more masterful at it, there's going to be a potential for, not that you're going into it for profit, but there's a potential to support yourself kind of through your passion. And I think there's a passion inside of everyone. I think it's just really difficult for people to tap into that with the way that our society is kind of laid out these days. It doesn't really provide that room for people to explore those roots. If I had said that I liked art in high school, they would be like, okay, that's cool, but like make sure you focus on your sciences and your maths and your English and stuff like that. I don't really think they really grab onto people's potential with the education system and stuff like that, where I think you need to be encouraging kids, especially at a young age, to kind of tap into what makes you happy and what you want to pursue. And if you don't want to be an artist 5 years later, then find something new to do. Or if you, I don't know. I think there's a lot of potential in people. And I think it's exciting to know that other people are doing ayahuasca and kind of tapping into that. But it also kind of makes me sad that more people can't do it and more people haven't done it, because I think it would change a lot.
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. Like thinking about sort of like my life path, and when people are like, why do you have a business degree? And it's like, the reasons are not because of anything I was interested in. It was because like a business degree made the most sense. Like I really love like writing and that sort of thing. But like I would have loved to have like an arts degree, but like you don't make money off an arts degree.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I'll go get a business degree. Like that's practical.
And it's like, it's absolutely mind blowing to me now through all my experiences. Like that's the mentality of people going into university. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was kind of the same way. I was like, well, I don't want to do any sciences. So like, I'm pretty good at math and I don't know. Yeah, you can make a lot of money doing business. So I'm going to go into business. Like that just seemed like the logical thing to do. And everyone was like, oh, good for you. You're going to like a really great business school. And it wasn't like, are you sure this is what you want to be doing? Like, is this what you're passionate about? It was, I think the kind of reasons why a lot of people go into it are wrong or maybe a little bit backwards, but
oh yeah,
yeah, like totally. Getting an arts degree would have been awesome. Like having all those skills that you could have got out of them.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But you are like, you're being like, led into this university thing where there's like 10 paths you can take or something. Whereas like life has like, you know, infinite number of paths you can take and you're
for sure.
Like, oh, you got to choose between these like four things.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, I don't know, my brother is currently doing his master's at Haskane. And we were just joking around. He just finished a finance course and him and I had the same finance prof. And it was really funny seeing his perspective on it because he's doing this because he really wants to, pursue a certain line of business. And I just see like this continuing passion growing in him towards what his end goal is. But then we talk about this finance course and he's like, why do I have to do this? Like, I'm not going to apply this to my life. And it was like 4 months of torture and struggle to just pass this course. And I felt the exact same way. And the prof was an interesting fellow as well. And, yeah, it's just really weird how, yeah, you have all these opportunities to choose different paths, but you're kind of pigeonholed at the same time where you're like, you have to do this finance course and you have to do this accounting course. And whether or not that's going to apply to the rest of your life is like, I don't know. You're kind of forced into things that maybe you don't love to do. And there's skills in there that you could take away from it, but it'd also be really nice to just, yeah, be able to have that freedom to kind of pursue the things that interest you and that you see yourself having potential in. So,
yeah, it's a bit ridiculous that people have like just decided what courses you need to take in order to be successful as like a business major.
And yeah.
Because like most of the classes are pretty difficult. You end up like, or at least I know for me and I know for Ryan as well, like we ended up using our options as like the easiest courses that we could take.
Rocks for jocks.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Killed that course.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This idea that like you, like if you really enjoy marketing and you go through a marketing degree, but they're like, oh, you need to do accounting, you need to do OPMA, whatever. Because if you want to run a business, you'll need to know these things. But if you truly need to know those things, then once you actually need to know them, then you're going to be extremely motivated to learn them. Like once you've started a marketing business and you're like, oh,
I need
to learn accounting. And then you're going to absolutely do that.
Or if you've got the money, you can hire someone else to do it for you.
Yeah. I was just going to say that something that I'm really learning is like people have the things that they specialize in and there's like no point in trying to pretend like you know stuff that you don't know. Like I hire an accountant and I have a business degree. I was forced to take like 3 accounting classes.
Yeah, totally. I had this really weird experience. I started working for that advertising agency when I was in my 3rd year of university. And I think it would have been either my second semester of 3rd year or my first semester of 4th year. I was taking a class and there was this one section of the class that I completely aced it because everything that we were learning in that class, I had learned directly from doing it at work. It was like analytics and there's different terminology and like click-through rates and stuff like that. And it really dawned on me like, why am I taking this course when I learned it by experiencing it? I learned it by doing it. I had someone teach me there firsthand and they're like, okay, now you kind of know what to do, roll with it. If you have any questions, come ask me. And it really made me think like if I ever have kids, like I don't know if I'd force them into university. I think if it would be in that 4 years that you go to university, I think you could get 4 years of direct work experience and be way, way further ahead than people who are just coming out with a degree. I think there's this, yeah, learning by doing is so much more effective than learning by being taught or reading or just listening to someone. So
yeah, I remember
I think it's a little like, bit there's like I'm sure there's a middle ground there between experience and education.
Yeah, definitely. I remember running into a guy that I went to high school with at like Joey's, like the restaurant, and he was just like working as an assistant manager there. And he was like, yeah, I want to open a restaurant. And I was like, oh, well, why aren't you getting like a business degree or something? And he was like, well, like I'm working in a restaurant. Like I'm learning everything I need to do by working my way up as a manager here. And it was kind of like this moment for me. I think I was in like second year university. So just completely like in university zone. But I was like, oh, that's like an interesting concept. Like that's not really something that I ever considered. Like university is just like this thing that I was doing. And I was like, I guess you could do that. Like that kind of makes sense.
But that's so the
and you kind of feel like you know everything, and you're like, oh yeah, if you're not in university, like you're not doing it right. Like trust me, I know what I'm doing. I'm in university. I'm on the right path. Totally. Trust me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's this like kind of not ideal mindset, I guess.
You're kind of trained into thinking that you're better somehow because you're like winning. You're winning this game, but like the game doesn't actually get you anything in the long term.
Yeah.
And the program I'm doing, Praxis, is actually really designed around like that idea of creating education through just like actually learning stuff instead of getting a credential.
Right.
But one thing me and Amanda have talked about quite a bit with kids is like even like the entire education system is built off this idea that there's going to be an authoritarian who tells you what you ought to learn, what you ought to do versus just, you know, living your entire life as a self-directed human being would probably be so much better for you. So if you just don't go to school at all and just do what you want to do, and then you're going to figure out what you like, as long as you've got support and resources around you to help you with that.
Yeah. I think there's like a lot of opportunity for there to be a system kind of built around that where like instead of just being this black sheep who goes off on their own, like once you've kind of found what you want to do, that there's a system, there's support there for you that can assist you and give you the kind of maybe additional skills or the tools that you need to do or that you need to have to pursue and kind of perfect yourself in that path that you choose.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were talking to someone who is like 24, had graduated university, had a bit of a travel experience, and now was like working in like their like career or trying to like move up the ladder and like has this like idea of going, like quitting and going traveling, like what would you say to that person?
That's really tough. I think I'd probably just tell them kind of similar to what we've been talking about already. I think it's just like, I don't think I'd want to go in there with a script or like a certain message that I wanted to give to them. I think it would just be sharing my personal experiences and I think it'd be kind of a weird one for me because I'd be like, oh, hey, look at all this art that I'm making. And they'd be like, oh, congratulations. Like have fun being broke for the rest of your life. but I think there's also, I don't know, like I feel like when I talk about the things that I really love, I give off a certain energy and I give off a certain amount of passion that I hope would be inspiring to someone. And I think it's the same idea. I don't want to like stick on the topic of ayahuasca, but I think it's the same idea as like sharing my experiences with that. And I've always kind of looked at it, if 100 people are willing to listen to me about it, and one person goes out and does it and has a life-changing experience, then everything that I've ever talked about was worth it. I think it was, I think that's kind of how I feel like what my purpose is these days, is whether it's about ayahuasca or whether it's just about kind of pursuing your dreams or in the end, it's really about being happy and everyone has the ability inside of them to make themselves happy. It's all internal. You can make the best out of any situation. I truly believe that. and I think I would just try to share my experiences with them, and just encourage them to, and maybe ask them a few questions like, what, if you weren't working this job, like what would you like to do? Like if you didn't have to worry about money for the rest of your life, what would you want to do? And then, I think there's a really good, Alan Watts quote on YouTube. There's like a little video that someone made and it's basically just like, he's like, what do you want to do? Why aren't you doing it? Like if you want to travel the world, like why aren't you doing it? What's holding you back? Oh, is it money? Well, there's opportunities to make money as you travel so you can support yourself as you go. Or is it, oh, do you want to Professional athlete's a weird one, because I think everyone kind of has their physical limitations. But why not pursue that? Like, maybe you'd want to talk to someone a bit younger who kind of has more time to build themselves up in that. But I think everyone has, yeah, that interest or that kind of like that pilot light that's lit, but it hasn't really been cranked up yet. And I think if you're able to get people at the right time in their life, you're able to kind of stoke that fire a little bit. And I think I just want to share my experience. And if someone looked at me and was like, that guy's full of it and I don't want to be anything like him, then that's that. And I'm okay with that. And I'm going to try not to take it too personally. But if they look at me and they're like, oh man, this guy's so passionate about this, and I can see that he's truly happy and like he's doing the thing that he really likes to do. And yeah, he has to work on the side to make a few bucks to pay for rent and to pay for groceries and stuff like that. But I like to think that I'm not saying that I'm an inspiring person, but I think if people take the time to sit down with me and I'm able to kind of share my feelings and stuff, that they'll see that I'm very passionate about what I'm doing, and hopefully that could resonate to someone else. But I try not to force it. I think everyone kind of has their own path and their own speed that they want to go on. But if I can be like my friend who introduced me to traveling for the first time, if I can have a similar effect on someone else's life, or if I'm not going to change their life to a huge, or like on a huge scale, but if I can kind of like shove them one degree off the current path that they're on and kind of open up a new way of thinking for them, I think that's like a really special thing for me. I think that's a really cool feeling to know that I've potentially had that impact on people. And if I haven't, then I'm just going to cry myself to sleep a little bit tonight. And, maybe it's all been a waste. Who knows?
No, it's never a waste.
No, I think it is like really inspiring to go. And I know that from like our own personal experience, like to decide like, oh, we don't want to go back and get jobs. We're going to get like, I'm going to work at a cafe. That was like a bit like, I don't know, scary is the right word, but like, you know, you get this like weird reaction from your parents and you get this weird reaction from the people who you were friends with. And I think it is really inspiring to keep like, to meet more people who have found something they care about and to say like, oh, I really want to do that, because life's about enjoying life, not about trying to accumulate things that you end up losing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like interesting for me because, so I worked for Lululemon, like when we moved to Canmore, Banff, and everyone there is like very goal oriented. Like they were so supportive of everything I wanted to do. And my friends for the most part were supportive of me, but I got a little bit of like flack from my brother. Like he called me one day and was like, I just don't understand why you're wasting your life working at Lululemon, like doing yoga, like hiding away in the mountains when you could have a really good job working for an oil and gas company in Calgary. And I was like, that right there is the problem. You don't understand that I don't want that.
Yeah.
Like he
and
just
it's
had
bad
no
for everyone around you. Yeah. Like if you're in that situation and you're doing the exact opposite of what you want to be doing, like you're negatively affecting yourself, and in turn that is affecting the people around you. Like I know when I was working in corporate Calgary, I wasn't the most pleasant person. I wasn't the happiest person. And I think that at times rubbed off on other people, and I maybe wasn't always the best person to be around. And so it comes down to a personal level, but that personal level also has more like a macro impact on your immediate surroundings and the people that you surround yourself with.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that.
Awesome. Where can people find out or check out your art, Christian?
Right now I'm just on Instagram. It's at cdennis.art. So cdennis.art. I'm just kind of in this, it's a cool phase, but it's also kind of a uncomfortable phase where I feel like I have so much potential to grow it further. But time restraints and having to work and stuff like that, I feel like I'm like kind of at the edge of that bubble where I'm ready to burst out, but I know I've got a lot of work to do and stuff like that. But I've really been enjoying, I've been collaborating with a friend who's really big into yoga and writing. He's, he has also had life changing ayahuasca experiences. and you should check him out. It's, at Superhuman Journal. So he's a really incredible writer. And we've been doing some collaborations where I've been adding my artwork onto photographs of him doing yoga poses. And then he writes short stories or quotes and stuff like that that go along with the graphics, kind of stuff that he's working through in his personal life. So I've really been enjoying collaborating. And so if there's anyone, another artist or photographer or writer or anything like that, who's listening to this and they want to throw me a line, you can either just message me on Instagram. I might throw my email on my Instagram account so people can talk to me. But I think I'm still not a established artist, but I'm excited to kind of see where it goes. And I always look forward to vibing off other people and other artists and kind of seeing things in a different way. And check it out.
And we were just browsing through your Instagram page before we started, and there's lots of awesome paintings on there. So everyone should go and check them out.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm a yoga teacher now, so I was like, ooh, I love all these.
Yeah. The yogis love it.
Yeah, it's pretty in line with the sort of yoga stuff, which is
cool. For sure, yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and share your experiences traveling around the world and personal growth and all that.
Thank you, guys. That was a lot of fun.
It's really incredible to get in touch with people who are like-minded and just like changing their lives and empowering themselves.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me on. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
See ya. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye. All right. So that was our conversation with Christian. Hopefully you've feeling inspired, maybe motivated to find your passions and pursue, you know, your life the way that you want to do it. If you have any questions or comments, as always, you can reach out to us, www.theworldwanders.com. Check out the show notes. If you like the podcast, like us on Instagram at The World Wanders. Follow us at Twitter. Twitter.
And if you are considering doing ayahuasca or you were interested by the idea of ayahuasca, feel free to reach out to us if it's something you feel nervous about. And we can definitely send you some links to podcasts that we really liked or things that kind of influenced us to think more openly about it.
Yeah.
Happy to interact over that.
Yeah, definitely. And if you like the show and you want to support us, check out our page on Patreon. So it's www.patreon.com/theworldwanders. And we appreciate support in any way, even if it's a hello via our contact form or a like on Facebook.
Yeah, we do support different forms of support differently.
This is going on too long. As always, thanks for listening.
And thanks for supporting our attempt to create the world's longest outro.
Ciao.